This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employees seminar held on March 18, 2026 in Millersburg, Ohio.
Well, good afternoon. So my wife and I have a lot of differences, and they say that the differences between a husband and wife is what makes a marriage strong. And so one of those differences is that after lunch, whenever she eats, she tells me that it actually energizes her. Whereas I'm the opposite. After lunch, I could actually find a couch somewhere and lay down for a nap. So we're the opposite that way. I want to go for a nap, and she wants to go for a jog after a meal. So this afternoon, I hope that you're all more like my wife than you are like me. Otherwise, you'll all be sleeping. Well, it's really good to be in Ohio. I was looking forward to this. I normally come down here on Christian Aid Ministries business because Berlin is not too far from here. And this time I'm here representing RFW Farms because I felt like it more appropriately represented the topic that I'm discussing this afternoon. I was fascinated yesterday in the hotel. I was just leaving the lobby ready to come over to the first AF event yesterday, and there had been a snowfall. And I heard a lady kind of exclaim, looking outside and saying, you know, oh, look at all the snow. And I looked and I saw a few flakes in the air, and I felt like saying, lady, you know what? Welcome to real life in the north. You know, this is everyday life for us. And then as I was bidding farewell to the staff behind the counter, she just had these deep lines of worry and concern on her face, and she just said, you know, just be careful out there. You could just see that, oh, she was so concerned. And I said, look, lady, this is normal from where I come from. This is snow, and we're used to that. And when I got out to my truck, there's about a quarter inch on my windshield, and I just kind of took my sleeve off on my window and wiped it off. And I thought about home in this winter, how I take the barn broom to get rid of 2 feet of snow, and that can be fairly normal in the morning. So anyways, I came down to Ohio for a weather break to get some sunshine, see some green grass, and here I am experiencing more of home. So what I was really concerned about is that maybe I'd be accused of bringing the weather down with me, but so far nobody suggested that. God's still in control of the weather, isn't he? We're thankful for that. All right. So originally there had been probably some advertisement that I work with Christian Aid Ministries. And when I looked at the topic of radiating optimism, I started looking at my two roles in life. And I opted with the committee to actually talk about RFW Farms because in Christian Aid Ministries, we see so many pictures and photos and stories and reports from the field of tragic stories of people that are suffering, they're in poverty, refugee camps, scenes of war, all these different things. And so it's not hard to be grateful or optimistic when you see those pictures. That's what we find. We're so grateful for what we have. It's the nature of our work. But on the other hand, in the hog production business that I'm a part of as well, we've seen some real volatility in the markets. And we've seen the highs and the lows. And we've gone through some year after year after year with red margins where we lost money. And so that comes closer to home is how, as believers in the workforce, do we radiate optimism in a realistic way? And so I opted to actually focus on the RFW Farms side of what I do this afternoon. I also had some flashbacks as I thought about this title, Radiating Optimism. I remember as a young boy calling into a company. And every time I called that company, it was a hardwoods company back in the days when I dabbled a little bit in woodcraft, and the person that answered the phone always answered the same. I can still hear it. Good afternoon, Craftsman Hardwoods. This is Robert speaking. And we had this internal joke that, you know what, he was so optimistic in how he answered the phone that if we're having a bad day, I'll just dial the number, listen to his greeting, and then just hang up again if I have no wood to order. And it just reminded me of how powerful the influence of optimism is. But I want to tell you the rest of that story. Robert the owner of that business was in a wheelchair. And I remember when he was young and he could run and walk and jump just like I could. And then a tragic accident happened and he was confined to a wheelchair as a paraplegic. And he could still radiate that optimism despite his circumstances. And I love calling that company because it demonstrated the power of somebody that understood that life was more than just the circumstances. It was amazing. I'll never forget Robert at Craftsman Hardwoods. I also remember as a boy, my father would use a certain auto mechanic in a local village. And every time he answered the phone, we asked him how he was, and he would say, "Dandy fine, dandy fine." And sometimes I find myself answering that way as well. And you could say, well, that seems a little superficial, but it's amazing when you knew that a man like that on the other end that just offered a cheerful greeting like that, if you had something with your vehicle that would cost lots of money, you could know that this was a man to talk to. And he would help you through the difficulty of making a decision that costs money. You might say, well, that sounds kind of superficial, but it was actually just an interesting thing that I remember as a boy and how powerful that was. And it's also interesting because he was the chief of the local fire company. And it was known that he was able to keep his calm and be upbeat in the middle of tragic circumstances. And so sometimes you'd have these major fires where multiple fire companies would come out, maybe a little like our last speaker talked about, 15 vehicles showing up, those types of scenes. And he would show up there, and if his fire company was the first to respond, then he'd be the commander for the whole operation. And so he would be in the command vehicle with a radio in each hand, just barking out orders and keeping calm with all the troops as they were dealing with this issue. And could it be that that same attitude of optimism by which he answered the phone also carried over into how he did his first emergency response services? All right, so this afternoon I decided I'm going to just throw a few pictures in because they say a picture's worth 1,000 words and just gives you the context of the business that I'm involved with. And then as I get into my stories and talk about the various aspects of this topic, you can have a little bit of a context. So this is the team that I work with. This is the board and the ownership and the management group at RFW Farms Limited. This picture was taken after our annual general meeting. We're also part owners of Conestoga Meat Packers. It's a co-op that slaughters about 40,000 hogs a week. And a lot of our hogs get slaughtered there and marketed under the brand Conestoga Meat Packers. And it's actually interesting, just as a little FYI and a side note, is that we have actually, a lot more of our pork products are in local Walmarts, Costcos, and Foodlands, which is a national grocer up there. And one of the reasons is because we used to get all the cheap pork from the United States. We couldn't compete against them. And they would stock some of those big box stores. But now, because of the tariffs and so on, they're actually reaching for more locally produced pork. So a lot of that gets sold under Conestoga Meat Packers. I took this picture just a few days ago, a beautiful sunrise. I was off to this farm for a staff meeting. And I just pulled over to take that picture. I thought, wow, isn't that so beautiful, this spring sun just above the horizon. Here's a picture of one of our teams holding an award that they had won for good performance. And I just love to see the people that I work with. Most of our farms are contracted. Some are owned with staff. And so I have the opportunity to work with contractors as well as staff members working our farms. And approximately 75% of our contracted farms are owned by conservative Anabaptists. And approximately 50% of our staff are conservative Anabaptists, just to give you a perspective. And I put this one in yet so that you can see inside of a barn. We're coming under a lot of social pressure to give sows an option to choose if they want to be in a stall by themselves or if they want to be able to leave and go and socialize with other animals. And so that just gives you a bit of an idea. Free choice, loose sow, gestational housing. All right, just a couple opening stories about the influential power of optimism in the workplace. The first one is the perspective as a business leader, and the second one, a perspective as a staff member. And I hope this afternoon, I realize that a lot of you are staff members. I'm going to try to keep honing it back to you as staff members, but Also, this is for you if you're a leader of any kind, whether you're a supervisor, a foreman, or a general manager, whatever you might be, keep in mind that you are influencing somebody. And so this subject of optimism is important for you. Well, I remember this story. This was one of our contracted sow farms owned by a conservative Mennonite family. And I just remember we were going through one of the many viruses that tend to inhabit the pig species, I'll put it that way. And this particular year, we had three sow farms that broke with PRRS virus and one that broke with PED virus. I don't know if there's any farmers here or not that knows what PRRS virus is, but it was a devastating year. And I remember I allowed myself to resort to feeling a little discouraged, and I allowed that discouragement to kind of radiate out to the people, to this particular family, when I was visiting their farm that day. Actually, I think maybe it was on the phone, but this was the man. And I just remember his reaction when I started just kind of talking about it. It's really tough right now and kind of belly aching, you might say, like we say in Canada. And I just remember him saying, he said, "Now don't you go down yet too." He said, "All of us are discouraged and we're leaning on you and your optimistic spirit to bolster us through this time. If you go down, what hope do we have left?" And I just remember hanging up the phone after that conversation. Up till that point, I hadn't realized the impact that I had. I wasn't even being intentional. I was just trying to, help them through and try to encourage them and remind them that tomorrow will be a better day. And he told me that. I'll never forget that. Just wanted to share that as an opening story. I also remember my perspective as a staff member. This is the president of our company. He's a member of the Conference Mennonite Church, and he attends as a member of the oldest Mennonite church in Canada, in Vineland, Ontario. And he's taught me a lot of things, but I remember going through some of those dismal years back in the late 90s and the early 2000s when we were struggling with our balance sheet. And I'd be reading all the Hog magazines and the Ontario Farmer and all these different papers and reading about how dismal things are, knowing internally that we're losing money on every hog that we market. And I was feeling pretty blue and just wondering, is this the end of my career? You know, what next? And I remember feeling blue and down in the dumps. But week after week, I would meet with the president of our company, and it would just be like plugging in an electric car or an e-bike into the power for a couple hours. And not with some delusional notion of, oh, pie in the sky, it'll be okay. He was just, you know what? Yes, we're facing the odds right now, but we're going to persist, we're going to pursue, and we're going to get through this. And I just remember how powerful that was as a staff member plugging into somebody that had an optimistic attitude and could help me through that difficult time in my life, in my career. There is a biblical precedent. The Bible says in 1 Thessalonians 5:18, "In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you." So think about the incredible potential for a Christian witness that we have on this subject. The Bible calls us to give thanks and have that attitude of gratitude in the most difficult of times. It's amazing. And I was thinking about Paul and Silas in the stocks in prison at midnight. If they could be there in that despicable situation and actually have a hymn sing at that time, and I believe that the songs that they chose were hymns of praise. Can you imagine that? They could do that, then us in our trying times, in our businesses, wherever we are, we can give thanks because we have a greater hope within. We've got something greater than the circumstances that we're dealing with right now. And there is always something to give thanks for because our Redeemer lives. And we're soon going to be celebrating Easter. We're going to celebrate that He not only died for our salvation, but rose again. And we have that hope and that power. So we have something to give thanks about. Now, not everybody in our company is a believer. And we have to understand that some of the people that we interact with and seek to radiate optimism, they're not believers. So we want to help them see that optimism comes from deep within our souls and not just sort of a superficial smile that we plaster on our faces and try to pretend that we're okay. I just remember, this is a quote by the president of our company. He said one time that the abnormally good times and the abnormally bad times both test the strength of human character. I never forgot that. I think the same thing is true when we look at the subject of optimism. the very good times and the very bad times are going to test the sincerity of who we are. And I see some nods there. I think you understand how important that is. You know, just on Sunday night, we invited a speaker to our church who had an amazing life story. He had been adopted, and finally, at 52 years of age, he set about to find his birth mother. And finally, he found his birth mother. It was a good experience. He met his sister. That was a good experience. They welcomed him. They were happy to see him again. I won't go into all the details, but there was one brother that said, "I don't want anything to do with him, with you." And so he was wrestling with that and coming to grips all his life. He had felt rejection because of some of his experiences. And now his brother, when he was so close to meeting his own flesh and blood brother, what would it be like? And then the brother was eventually diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And as he was in the hospital for the first wave of treatments, I guess that weakened state just kind of made him stop and think a little bit. And his mother went to visit him, and he said, "Do you think that my brother, my estranged brother that I've never met, do you think I should meet with him? Do you think he would meet with me the way I've treated him?" And his mother said, "Oh, he is a man of faith. He will forgive you. He would love to meet you." And so he reached out and said, "You know what? Let's meet." And so they had arranged a meeting date where he would get to meet for the first time his biological brother. But just days before that meeting, all of a sudden his cancer took a turn for the worse and he passed away and he never met that man. And so this had just happened in between the time that I asked him to come to our church and when he presented at our church. And he was very emotional. And I still remember in brokenness and tears, he shared the story. "I was so close to meeting my brother." And then he was gone. But I remember what he did next there at our podium there at Glad Tidings Mennonite Fellowship on Sunday night. He looked up and said, "But I know that God has my good in mind. And God has a purpose for even this as well." Powerful. He understood what the Bible teaches about in everything giving thanks. He also understood that it's in the bad times, the extreme bad times, extreme good times, that really test the authenticity of our faith and what we stand for. I also remember a book that I used to read as a little boy, and quite frankly, I still find myself thinking back to this story because Pollyanna, written by Ellen H. Porter, was inspiring to me back then and still is today. And she said, there's a quote from the book, "There is something about everything that you can be glad about if you keep hunting long enough to find it." She was the agent of optimism in her story. I don't know, how many of you have read Pollyanna book? Okay, a few Pollyanna fans. All right, thank you. It's not a Christian book, but it has a lot of good morals in it. And so she would go to all these places and meet with all these grumpy people and tell them that, well, there's something that you can be glad about. And she'd help them kind of dissect their life and see there, you know, you've got health or you've got a friend or whatever it was. And then came the day that she was up in the tree trying to sneak back into her bedroom after she had snuck out to attend a fair that her aunt didn't want her to attend. And she fell and became paralyzed, or I guess it was eventually repaired with surgery. But somebody came to visit her in bed and they said, "Remember the glad game? Remember how you taught everybody else that there's something to be thankful for in every circumstance?" And even she struggled to find something to be glad about. But I never forgot that quote and her attitude about what that looked like. Okay, just a bit of a background, just to define the phases in retrospect here in our company. And I want to talk about this because when you look at optimism, it looks different in all the different circumstances. Even within our company, on the different phases of business life that we went through, the message of optimism looks differently. And even in the few conversations that I've had in this group before this talk, I realize that there's so many different applications because there's so many different businesses out there represented in this group. And so it's going to look different in your world. And so I hope that there's something about my stories, my experiences that will help you as you seek to radiate optimism in the people in business that you influence or interact with. So the first one, was the economic crisis, the 1998 market crash. And I was really young back then, just nicely out of high school and getting involved with the business. And I was remembering, I just remember how dismal it looked. We were told that this was almost getting to the Great Depression type era. And they told these exotic stories about how people would load their trucks with hogs or maybe throw 10 in the back, and they'd go to market and they'd go in and do some business, they'd come back out and they had more hogs than when they arrived. So they weren't even selling them. People didn't want them. So other farmers are saying, oh, there's an empty truck, and the farmer's gone, you know, having a coffee, whatever, and they chucked their hogs in the back and he'd come home with more than he left. And they were saying, oh, 1998 has got to be close to that, and oh, nobody wants our hogs. And so I remember with our president, James Reeser, his own background, when he first got into farming back in the late 70s, he had just come out of the University of Guelph, and he was thinking that he'd like to farm, and he said, I will never farm, because land prices were going up, and it was just unaffordable, and he'd never realized his dream of farming. But then the 80s came, and I don't know what happened down here in Ohio, but up in Ontario, interest rates went to 20, 21%. And a lot of farms defaulted on payments, and power of sales were put up for sale, and land prices came down. And he was able to actually begin to purchase farmland. And over the years, he eventually built this company. And so that's his background. He says, I faced the odds, and I know what it's like to think that you will never get through something, and we will persist. And so the message of optimism there was, we will get through this, we can together. And then there was the industry attrition from 2006 to 2012, and that was happening because of year after year after year of losses. And I just remember our message of optimism there is that, you know what, we're going to persist, we're going to seek to do our very best and be efficient, and what's going to happen here is the half-hearted producers and the people that are considering retirement, they'll just decide that they're going to expedite the process and do that sooner rather than later. And so that was the message of optimism, and that is actually what happened. And so the Canadian sow herd as well as the American sow herd really diminished in those years because people were saying, okay, I want to get out of here sometime. Now's the time. Let's just call our first loss our best loss and move on. That was our message of optimism. The next one was a new era of profitability from 2014 to 2020. And then our message was, how can we now deploy the new resources that we have to make us stronger for the next time we reach a downturn? And that itself was empowering. And we talked about battening down the hatches and strengthening the business and making investments. But that was also the time when there was headhunters that were out and about, and they were dropping in at farms and offering these exorbitant contracts, because, we can pay you way more than that, because they just saw the dollar signs in the here and the now. And so it was a test of loyalty for our contractors, because they recognized that we stuck with them through the worst of times. And so that offered its own unique set of challenges in this subject of portraying optimism. And then there was the building boom of 2018 to 2023. And we said, you know, assets are aging. Let's seize the moment of economic sunshine to upgrade our facilities and then focus on organic growth. Not so much just simply raw growth, but internal growth. Let's take this opportunity with building costs being affordable to make our facilities better and be able to survive the next decade or two. And then that, of course, came to a grinding halt after COVID-19. And it's low interest rates. All of a sudden, that was met by high interest rates. And I just remember sitting in a budget meeting and for the first time admitting to the people that we were talking about building with that, you know what, the business plan really doesn't look that good. And that eventually came to a halt. And then there was the disease implosion of 2020-2024. It just seems that disease ran rampant. And people were discouraged because of all the sick pigs that were happening, and that was its own unique thing. And I have some stories to tell there as well. So I've learned how important it is to be a source of empowerment to those that we lead. I've also learned that you don't just simply scrape together a whole bunch of upbeat words and embody this starry-eyed, happy-go-lucky attitude trying to convince others that we aren't sinking or burning. You know, I'm actually more afraid of superficial optimism than I am of heartfelt pessimism. I think that one is a little more dangerous than the other. So here's the outline. Shaping business culture, sharing business confidentialities, and sharpening business character. And I'd like to just hone in on all of these three for a little while this afternoon. There is a healthy way to radiate optimism, and there's an unhealthy way to radiate optimism. And there's an abundance of metaphors to describe unhealthy, foolish optimism. You know, there's this one that talks about whistling past a graveyard, or somebody else said rearranging the decks on the Titanic. Somebody else talked about a fool's paradise. We don't want to be that sort of person. And so I put together this spectrum, I call, of outlook and attitude. And I'd like to look at all these, this entire range from a fatalistic attitude to pessimistic, realistic, optimistic, pragmatic, idealistic, and delusional. And see if together this afternoon we can find what the ideal is for us as we seek to be that optimistic person in the lives of those we influence. Fatalistic. Basically, what that means is we are headed for irreversible destruction outside of our control. Now, you've all heard of doomsdayers. All they can think about is that, you know, the ship is sinking. There's nothing that we can do. It doesn't matter if we change our attitude. It doesn't matter if we change our business plan. It doesn't matter what we do. This ship is sinking. Those are fatalistic people. And now, fatalism actually doesn't have to just mean negative. It usually does mean negative. You can be fatalistic in your worldview and think that nothing that you do will impact anybody or anything. But in this case, it's on the negative side, and that's extreme. As long as there's life, there's hope. And remember that sometimes an optimistic attitude is being realistic, and I'll get there soon, and making decisions to move on or shrink or whatever that reaction might be. The second one is pessimistic. Now that is just a little bit better, a little bit towards the optimistic on this spectrum here. Our present and future reality is dark and gloomy. Okay? So it doesn't sound quite so dead-endish, does it? It's dark and gloomy, but you know what? Eventually the sunshine will come back again. So think about Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, from the Charles Dickens novel. Everybody looks at him as a grumpy man. Yes, but if he could have an attitude change, there actually is something beyond the haze of pessimism that could help him overcome his obstacles. And then there's realistic. We believe that despite the challenges, we can survive the odds. Now that's being realistic. It's recognizing that there's challenges, but it's not as extreme as pessimism or fatalism. It's saying we're in a tough situation, but we can survive the odds. And I love reading biographies of inventors. And so let's say Henry Ford comes to mind. You know, these people believe in their product. They want to get it out to the public. And they're working hard. And almost all of them went through some extreme financial duress to get to the point where their product was actually marketed mainstream. And they were realistic people. They understood the odds, but they knew that the world needed their product or wanted their product, and they were willing to deny themselves and be on the fringe of bankruptcy, whatever it takes. They understood that it was difficult, but they were realistic and did what they could to overcome the odds. And then there's optimism, and that is dead in the center, and that's what we're talking about this afternoon. We believe that there is strong hope that our situation is redeemable. And I believe that that is the true meaning of what it means to be optimistic. We look at hope. There is hope for us. Okay? And I put that in the center because I think that is the target of what we're looking for. And then going beyond optimistic, now we're going to the other end of the spectrum. We're moving away from the fatalism side. There is a pathway to a workable solution. There is a pathway to a workable solution. So that is starting to talk about how there is a solution, and this is a pathway to get there. I just remember our neighbor, his shop burned, and we had come home one night, and I went down to the shop to just check up on a few things, and I saw a glow in his shop and a crackle, and I was like, what is this? He wasn't home. And I caught on that his shop is on fire. And so I called the fire trucks, and long story short, the building was damaged, and it had to come down. He had to rebuild. And I just remember he took on this attitude of being pragmatic. is my shop burned down, but we're going to build it bigger and we're going to be stronger, right? And that was his attitude. He was pragmatic and he found a pathway to workable resolution. And then there's the idealistic. And this is what we can do together if we adopt the blueprint of success. So, just look at what we can do together. Here's the blueprint, and we're going to do this. And I think about Pollyanna as a bit of an embodiment of this point on the spectrum. We'll just play the glad game, right? Like, we can do this. It's way out there, and it looks distant, almost out of our reach, but we can do this, and we're going to keep talking about it. That's idealism. And then finally is delusional. We will absolutely succeed regardless of the circumstances. And there are points in our lives, in our business lives, where we can't be delusional. We can never be delusional, but we're tempted to be delusional. And I think about an extreme example of terrorists today. And they believe that they can blow themselves up and they'll receive an eternal reward, right? That would be an example of delusional. And that's extreme at the extreme opposite end. And so where do we find ourselves? Where do we find ourselves on this spectrum as we examine our hearts? The management team needs to look at both ends of the spectrum as they evaluate every situation. It's necessary to do this to avoid fooling ourselves. But I believe that as we relate to our staff, there is a need to stay close to the center. Remember that sometimes the message of optimism includes an exit strategy. Optimism doesn't always mean insisting on survival and growth in our current model. It can mean making some significant changes, and that's okay. For us, during the economic crisis of 2006 to 2012, we informed our staff and contracted producers that we needed them to stay focused and engaged on the livestock and achieve the best possible performance, because we recognize that we can't manipulate the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, because that's where our Ontario pork marketing price is structured based on. It's based on a formula. We can't manipulate that. We're price takers. And yet, on the other hand, we can minimize our costs by pursuing low feed conversion. We can reduce mortality. We can maximize daily rates of gain by, appropriate ventilation and all the things that go into marketing or raising animals efficiently as possible. And then we can boost our marketable pork produced per inventoried sow per year, which is one of our most baseline metrics that we use in the company. And people really listen to that message of optimism. Even though things were dark, there is something that we can do. There is something that is within our control. We can help RFW Farms lower costs by being very good farmers. It's something that is within their power to achieve. All right, sharing business confidentialities. There's an inherent desire among staff members and everybody in the company to know what goes on inside the heads of business leadership. It's possible to be so stoic and so tight-lipped that our associates feel vulnerable. There is a sense of security in being privy to the basic plan of action, especially during hard times. And so I've divided this out into four points. There's corporate planning, there's contingency planning, there's collateral planning, and creative planning. So the corporate planning, we invite people into the conversations, and we have lots of producer meetings throughout the year, quarterly for sows and biannual for nursery and finishing. And we bring them in together and we talk about how we can succeed together. And we let them share what they are reading or hearing in the industry, and we evaluate the content together and invite them to weigh in on the matter. And so at our producer meetings, we've really started entertaining the idea of having round tables. And in round tables, we just simply invite everybody, metaphorically or sometimes realistically, a round table to discuss problems together. And I've discovered that is a way that we can radiate optimism. Invite them into the conversation and let them speak into it. This is what I've heard. What do you think about this idea? The man on the far left there with his hand up is our veterinarian on the production team. And so he's weighing in on a potential policy regarding health. So we eat a lot of good food. We drink a lot of good coffee in a pleasant environment and engage in open, friendly, upbuilding discussion. And then there's contingency planning. And this is more in sharing the emergency plans with staff in order to make them aware of what we want to do. within upper ranks of leadership, more details can be offered. For example, I just remember when we were going through that time of extreme economic duress, we developed a framework of a plan. If this doesn't let up soon, we're going to start selling off our sow base and reducing our sow herd. And I just remember the relief of hearing that straight from the boss's lips, that we can shrink. We can begin to lower the number of our sows, because they're the reasons why we're producing so many pigs, each of which has a loss hanging over its head. And I just remember that contingency planning was very helpful for me. And then there's collateral planning, to be told that, you know what, we have enough security to pay our debts. We can sell a farm, and we have a credit at our account at the feed mill to offset the seasons of no profit. And we have strong credibility with our lending institutions and suppliers. And I just remember how valuable and helpful that was. And then there's the creative planning. How can we overcome our problems going forward? And the example here that I have in this picture is one of our sow farms that has been dealing with a lot of disease. We actually completely changed the ventilation system from negative static pressure to positive static pressure, and completely changed it around. And we put in a bank of filters at our hospital level. And so this will snag the tiniest, most microscopic virus. And we were just feeling, you know, in desperate need to do something because of the cost of these virus breaks. And so we invited staff in. The man on the far left is the manager of this unit. And we invited him in, and he was a big part of this planning process. It's the only renovated sow barn in all of Ontario with this technology in it. And that team was so empowered by being invited in to this process of creative planning. You know, the other types of technologies that are out there is gene editing that's going on with some of the modern genetics that we're told apparently cannot ever get this virus, because they've removed the part from their genome where the virus that contributes to the breaking with this disease. So filters will cover exposure to new diseases in the future if they should change. So that's just a little bit of an idea how we can be creative in our businesses and sit down with our people. And you can see that there's a lot of emphasis in our organization on interacting with people and bringing them into our planning and so on. And the final one is sharpening business character. And I'd like to just focus here on reflections, resolutions, and reassurances. Yet, in closing, reflections. The essential question is, what have we learned? What have we learned? And we found that this is very healthy, whatever it is that we've gone through as an organization or as a company. After it's all over, the experience or the situation or the season, you sit down together and you ask each other or ourselves, what have we learned? And honestly talk about that. It's okay to talk about the darkest days. I remember one herd that had PED virus, and it is a vicious virus that causes 100% mortality in piglets in a farrowing house. 100% mortality. And the reason it's 100% is because the ones that don't die of the disease, you're required to actually euthanize them. It's a horrible job. It's just part of anybody that's into livestock knows that sometimes farmers have to do that. And I just remember on one particular dismal day, I showed up at the farm to assist with that process of euthanization. And it was so difficult. And as we were hauling these piglets out the door and loading them onto the compost bucket, one of our staff members is in the John Deere tractor sitting outside the door. And I just remember, this is one of the most horrible jobs that I do in our business. And I remember looking at him, he was in the cab, and I was putting these piglets into the compost bucket, and we both just split laughing. We just laughed uproariously. I said, "Who signed me up for this job?" I said. And we just recognize that we're in a dark time, and that we were just able to laugh at our dismal situation and then move on. And so that's something that I have learned. We have to be able to talk about it. And the other aspect is mental health. whatever the situation might be. Sometimes, the world talks a lot about mental health, and a Christian has a different worldview of what mental health means and how you overcome it. I recognize that, but it's a very real thing out there. And I think that something that we have learned is that we must be there for our people when they're experiencing that sort of personal angst in their lives, and be there to help them and support them. And I've learned that management showing up to do the dirtiest jobs can be a wonderful way to demonstrate to them that you care about their well-being and their mental health. The next one is resolutions. The essential question is, what will we do differently next time? And I think that's a good question to ask ourselves, is what will we do differently next time? You know, I remember when we were going through the difficulty of not making money. Of course, one of the ways that you can, you know, instantly start to recover some of your or reduce your losses is to go back to your contract holders and say, look, we just can't afford to pay you the fee that we agreed on per head, per pig marketed. And, you know, is there a way that, you know, if we don't trim this back, there won't be any company left because we're going to go broke, right? And I just remember how difficult that was to go from producer to producer to producer during those 6 years from 06 to 2012, kind of with our hands out, like, would you help us? Like, we've got to trim this back or we're going to go broke, right? And so after we went through that, one of the resolutions that we made is we developed a market price adjustment system in our contract payments that rise and fall with the market. So 25% of our contract, our multifaceted contract, is hinged on the markets. And so as they rise and fall, we take the six-month average, and that correlates then to some bands of payment. And so as the price falls down, our payment also comes down. As the price goes up, their payment goes way up along with it. And then all of a sudden, our price is lower when we can't afford it as well, and our prices rise as we can afford it. And by the way, farmers are used to being price takers, so when they see the prices rise, they want to participate in that season of profitability. And when the prices drop, they're kind of geared and conditioned to be willing to be price takers and recognize that they have to decrease their payments for a while. So we built that mechanism into our contracts because we sat down and asked the question, what will we do differently next time? And the final one is reassurances. And I think we need to celebrate the things done well. And we try to do that, you know, when there are various achievements, let's say performance achievements. We consume a lot of coffee, we consume a lot of donuts, probably too many donuts. Sometimes we bring pizza in, and we have other forms of celebration for accomplishments, and simply to tell our people, thank you. Thank you so much for sticking with us and for working hard to overcome the odds and go through a difficult time and reach new heights of achievement. Radiating optimism is a powerful force in building relationships and improving contributions by our associates. And so I'd like to close here with a story, and this story shows the powerful force of optimism in building meaningful relationships. And I'll never forget that, and see if my emotions will allow me to tell this story, but it concerns a Dutch Catholic couple that raise hogs for us. And so he remembers well coming over from Holland many years ago with nothing but the shirt on his back and working hard and not sure how he's going to make all his payments. He had bought a farm, life was hard, and he worked very hard to get where he is today. And so as this farm family went through these difficult circumstances with us, and they saw us sincerely trying to radiate that optimism to the entire company through some of those times, I just remember he came to us and said, you know what? One way that we can help is to just simply stop paying us. And so he invited us to discontinue our payments until the markets turn around. God had been good to him, he said. He had been able to build up some personal reserves in his finances. And he said, I can get by with no payment for several months until you're able to get back on your feet. And it just made me realize, wow, this can be the outcome of somebody that recognizes what you're trying to do, what you're trying to portray, the power of optimism. He wanted to be on board our ship. He did not want to see our ship go down. And he was willing to make this incredible personal sacrifice to make that happen. It was a powerful moment for me to hear that, to see that, and may God be with you as you heard my stories, heard my experiences, hopefully you can find a way to take that to your companies, your organizations, and be that powerful voice that radiates optimism, that brings hope, that brings comfort, that brings a future to your people, whatever the situation might be, both good and bad. Thank you for listening to me. God bless.